I'm Zach.
And I'm Josh.
And this is Lamp Stomp, a Pixar podcast.
Got it. How do we want to start this?
I'll start it.
Okay.
Josh, we are back.
Hey.
And for the first time, maybe since we've started this podcast, I know pretty much everything that's going to go on during this podcast, and you know virtually nothing that is going to go on during this podcast. Is that correct?
No, I know the format of what we are about to do, and I know none of the content.
Awesome. Okay, so this is going to go out. We have been recording a whole bunch of different things. I know we kind of left you guys the other day with a short little podcast, just kind of explaining what we're going to be doing next. Talked about Not Quite Pixar. Well, since we actually recorded that, we have recorded, I think, Not Quite Pixar movies. And so we are kind of barreling through getting some of that recorded so that you guys can have more consistent podcasts back when Lightyear comes out. But this podcast is actually going to go out the day that we record it. I'm gonna try to get this out later today just so that you guys can have a little bit of content in between the waiting time. Okay, Josh, here is what I have done. I have went to the internet and put out a whole bunch of different feelers and said, what is your biggest Pixar question? Whether that be like, hey, is this kind of a plot hole? Or, hey, what if this happened? And right. What if this happened and how would that change things? Or just in general, what is your biggest Pixar question? And I have gotten a whole lot of different questions that we are going to be able to have some conversation about. This podcast is going to feel like an extended 22 section where we are just kind of picking and prodding at the different movies. I definitely don't have every movie, but we have a good selection of movies that we can talk about right here. And so that is how this podcast is going to go. Do you think you're ready?
I am not, but I am as ready as I can possibly be.
All right. So I've got my questions here. And so we will just discuss them. All right. The first one has to do with Turning Red. There's no really real order. I literally just got them in the order that they came in. So the first one actually the first two are Turning Red, which is kind of funny. But so the first question, Josh, where the heck was the police when a giant panda was terrorizing the Toronto, whatever, the convention center or whatever?
Oh man, that's a good question. I've got immediately something I wanted to look. I want to look up to check.
Okay, I'll talk for a second. So, I think that this happened so fast, right? Like just kind of out of nowhere, this giant panda is like almost like a Godzilla, like the Canadian Godzilla would be a giant red panda, honestly. But it's just walking through. So like, you have to know the police got called the second that giant panda started walking through Toronto, right? Before it ever got to the convention center, you know that 911 was called.
Mm-hmm. Had to. And Godzilla, it's military force.
Right. So. Yeah. And so where were the police, Josh?
They were caught up in red tape, I think. I think they ran it up the ladder. They were like, there's a what? They're like, someone call animal control. Someone call the then that's not a president. Call the whoever's in charge, the prime minister. And somewhere in the red tape, they were like, yeah, the police can handle it. And the police were like, yeah, somebody bigger's on their way. We're fine.
And by the time someone actually figured something out, it was over.
By the time somebody figured something out, there were six of them running around.
I think the red tape is definitely what happened. Yeah. All right. Here's another question. And this is one we kind of talked about, but I want to re-up it because it really is the kind of like, if this just would have happened, then the whole movie would have been better. Why did the family just not tell May about what was going to happen before she was 13?
Man, that's a good question. What are your thoughts on it? I've got some ideas.
I think that the only real explanation as to why the mom, what was the mom's name? I'm blanking. I can't think of her name. The reason that the mom did not tell May about
the reason that Ming
did not tell May about the whole panda thing is because of how traumatic it was for her, and which I guess she was trying to delay the inevitable, maybe, but even that's kind of a lousy reason, because it's gonna happen, or at least they thought it was gonna happen. They knew it was gonna happen, so why didn't they not just tell her and say, hey, this is gonna happen, when it happens we'll be here for you, we'll go through the ceremony, all that? Like, they could have been supportive versus the trauma that did happen, you know.
I think the movie hides behind, like, puts its answer out right in front of you, and it's not a good answer, so we want a better answer. But I think they just treat it like it's another, like, part of growing up, like puberty, like most,
yeah,
I don't know about most, I'd say it's probably common that parents don't talk about anything that's going to happen during puberty with their kids until the very last second when things have started to happen.
Yeah, that's
and serious. So they kind of treat it like that, like, it's going to happen, we'll fill her in when it gets here, and it's not really going to help. I assume that it is just under the assumption it's just not going to help to say anything sooner.
Yeah,
I guess it's not, they don't give a good answer or a good reason, but they associate it with bodily changes from puberty. So I assume that that's what they're kind of hiding behind, is that they're treating it like every other parent treats that.
Makes sense. All right, let's switch to movies for we might be coming back to Turning Red. I can't remember if there's another one, but and this is, we're jumping into Inside Out. Okay. And so this is something that I feel like we can have a pretty decent conversation about. And it says, why didn't Joy and Sadness just send the core memories back up to headquarters like the workers did with the triple dent gum commercial memory?
Okay. My first thought, not their job. They don't know what they're doing.
Right.
Like, these people, they send memories all over the place all the time. So it's just part of what they do. So it's not hard, but they're completely out of their element. Now, I'm trying to remember, did they witness them send it up?
Yeah.
Or was that something that we just saw?
No, it was a conversation that they were having. Like, hey, you can't get rid of those memories. Oh, we get rid of them all the time. We don't need to know the presidents, like, blah, blah, blah. And yeah. This one we'll never forget. And they send it up. But here's
a great observation.
And here's something that I think, I don't know that it even would have been good, because maybe she could have kept her core memories in that way. However, they would have got to headquarters, but who was still in control? Anger, fear, disgust.
Would they have even known what to do?
Right. And so, like, sure, they could have got them back up there. They could have been safe. They would have been all that. But, like, would they even have would that even have been good? Because they're still missing the emotions of joy and sadness. And so, and who knows, would those core memories started to turn anger or into fear or to disgust?
If they grabbed them.
Which that never really happened in the movie. It was always just sadness. But I think that was because Riley was kind of inclined towards sadness because of her situation. But I feel like if potentially disgust, fear, and anger would have stayed in control, that could have been something that she would have been inclined to as well.
I don't think so. I'm wondering why the memories didn't just like kind of automatically become that way. Like automatically start tinting towards sadness without sadness, because if you think about what's going on, it's a happy memory. And the only reason it's sad is because she's not there anymore. So right. She misses it, but like, she's not going to be inclined to be angry at that time. If she recalls that memory, Hunter and I are doing a lot of things right now. We're like trying to go to all the restaurants we love before we move and all kinds of stuff. And so I'm not going to be like disgusted at this place because I'm not going to get to come to it again for a while.
Well, I dare think that because she's at that pivotal age where like emotions are rampant, she did get angry at her situation and she did get mad about the fact that she had to move and she wanted to go back, which is why she got on the bus in the first place. And so maybe not disgust, because that's just kind of a weird emotion anyway. I think they could have done it. I don't know how well it would have done anything, because...
And I mean, I think that honestly, like, I don't know why Joy and Sadness didn't just take that same tube up. That's how they got out in the first place, was they were shot through one of those tubes.
It kind of makes sense, actually.
I think you can just grab the memories, throw them up, follow them right around.
Right, yeah, that's that more than anything. All right. this one I feel like is pretty self-explanatory, but it was the only one from this movie, and so I wanted to kind of bring it in. I think it's actually, we'll get through this question pretty easy because there's pretty much even an explanation in the movie, but someone posted about this movie, so I wanted to bring it up. We are going to A Bug's Life. Why do you think the grasshoppers, when did it start? How did the grasshoppers come to meet the ants in the first place? And why are they beefing?
I don't think they're beefing. I think that the grasshoppers just see an opportunity to take advantage of a weaker creature.
Yeah.
They probably were initially closer. Just like they found the ants by proximity. And then just continued to go back, I guess.
Saw that they could take advantage, and they took advantage. Yeah, I thought that was pretty self-explanatory, but been a while since we talked about Bug's Life, so I figured I'd throw
it in there. That's
true. All right, let's move to Soul. What determines which souls become mentors to new souls and which ones grow straight to the great beyond?
Oh, what do you think?
I think it's probably something to do with aren't their names Terry or
the Terrys.
Yeah, I think it probably has something to do with Terrys, but obviously it has something to do with doing something incredible on Earth, because like when you think about all the people that were mentors other than Joe, obviously it was, I can't remember exactly which ones they said, but Mother Teresa, like, who else did they say? Like,
Gandhi.
Yeah, Gandhi and
the presidents.
Right. And so it's people that did incredible things on Earth. I just wonder where the cutoff is. Like, who is, this is going to be a funny question, and I don't really even know that we can pull someone out, but who is the least inspiring on this Earth person that got to be a mentor other than Joe?
Let's play that game. Pull up, go online and see if you can pull up the wall that has all the stickers.
Okay, so Pixar, Soul, Sticker.
L22's Mentors and Soul. That's seems like what I'm looking for.
Okay, yep. That was a very good idea. I did not know that we could pull this picture up. Let's see.
Okay, so I've already got one. I glanced at a list, and the first one that I noticed seems like a really good, not a good mentor.
Okay.
Johnny Cash. Love Johnny Cash. Makes cool music. I don't think he made very great life choices, though.
Yeah, at times, I'm sure.
A lot of it's in different languages, so it's kind of hard to tell.
Oh, it is? That's funny.
Yeah, if you look at the walls, a lot of the names are in their natural language. So we'd have to do a lot of looking to find those.
Aretha Franklin, Joe Ramped, which isn't that like a Pixar guy?
I don't know. Maybe.
Jack Kirby, I'm pretty sure that's a Marvel like comic book writer. Queen Elizabeth.
I see Queen Elizabeth.
Marie Curie. Yeah. And so
I'm locking in with Johnny Cash.
I feel like that's probably.
I think he's not a good influence. Like it seems like he's probably a good person, but he made some pretty poor choices in his life.
All right. I feel good about that answer. All right. here is another soul question, and I think this was an important part of that movie. And it's kind of like a multi-parter because it builds upon itself, this question does. So I'm going to start with it, and then we may be able to continue our conversation with. And so how did Joe access the soul realm just by playing? Like, is it because he knew about it? Or could anyone that's quote unquote in the zone pop out of the zone and be in the soul realm?
I don't think so. I don't know. Like, it seems like you have to be aware that it exists. Because the only people that you see are like him and the hippie. What's his name?
Right. Sure.
So, and it's because they know that when they're in the zone, they're in a spot where they're actually able to be somewhere. They are somewhere else. Whereas most people, when they're in the zone, they feel like they don't know where they are. They don't know what's going on. They're just completely zoned in. So.
Right. And so what do you think happened to his body during that moment? Was he just continuing to play the piano or like
pass out? I think so. I think just still playing piano.
Yeah.
Stuck in the loop of whatever he was doing, just like hitting the same few notes.
Doodaloo, 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 doodaloo.
Yeah, stuck.
I think that's right. I think that because he knew about it and because he could kind of realize what he was doing by being in the moment and realize that he was in that moment, he's like, oh, now I could access this zone and go and talk to 22. And so I think that was probably a part of it. This is another soul question that's kind of related, but more towards the beginning. Why do you think Joe was the only one that was freaking out that he was dead? Why was everyone else just kind of content? There was children on the escalator to the great beyond. There was other people. Like, why do you think he was the only one that even acknowledged that it was freaky that he died?
I have no idea.
Yeah, that's weird, isn't it? Like, I had never thought about that because, like,
the old lady's the only one that makes sense. Everybody right, else yeah. should be trying to escape.
Yeah, like, oh my gosh, what happened to me?
It's supposed to be like a peaceful, happy-ish looking thing. So it would be really, it'd be very out of place if you just had like mass chaos and like screaming and scratching at the edge, trying to get out.
And so, yeah, I think the reason is probably a crappy one because it's because he's the main character of the movie. but It's probably because he had something that he was so excited about, and it was so random. And maybe the people around him, while, yeah, they probably died young, it might have been expected, as sad as that might be. Like, and you never want to even think about this, but maybe it was something to the effect of childhood cancer or something like that, that while not great, could prep those people for death, at least the people he was around. There may be other people that experienced that that might be freaking out, just not at the moment that he was there.
I want to lean more towards the, it, they're all in shock, and he just, for some weird reason, wasn't.
All right. We're going to Monsters, Inc. And this is one, I want us to try and answer this one without really commenting on the Pixar theory. Because there's the obvious Pixar theory answer to this. But I want us to try to think about how this experience affected who we're going to be talking about. What do you think happened to Boo after the experience of Monsters, Inc.? Was she old enough to really remember what happened? And how did that affect her life growing up? I think the answer is no, she cannot remember everything, but I definitely think she remembers Sully in some way.
Has to. She picks it because they have him come back and she remembers him.
Yeah, she says Kitty.
She has to. She is... She's... Okay, so roughly in age, I think that she's between the ages of 1.5 and 2.5.
Yeah.
Is my guess, based on my current 1.5-year-old and the way that she talks, it's slightly less literate than Boo, because like she doesn't like talk quite as much. She's not potty trained. So she's probably 2.5, because 2 is kind of like, on 1.5 to 2.5 is kind of, I think, early but on par for being potty trained, which Boo is. And she says some stuff, but she also babbles a ton. And I don't think it's that she's speaking some random language. I think that she's just babbling, little kid babbling. So I don't think that, I don't know about you, I don't have a single memory from that age.
No.
At all. I know some people that do. My oldest sister and my wife both have like a couple memories from when they were 2. I don't even know how that's even possible. I don't have a memory before I was 5. So I think that it's possible that it within a year or two, she would still remember Sully, but then as she grows up, it just disappears with childhood stuff.
Almost like a Bing Bong. I know. You've been on the monsters can be in, like, that was Riley's monster, and I just don't think that I believe that. But in the same way, I bet Boo could even have thought about Sully almost as her invisible friend. I bet that could have been a part of
it. That he was like an imaginary friend, like after he was not there, that she still continued to play with. And ultimately, I think that like for her actual life, like if she were to tell anybody, when I was a little kid, there was a monster in my closet and took me into a world of monsters, they'd be like, oh, wow, you were a very imaginative child.
Right.
And it would not actually affect her. I don't think it would have caused like any sort of like lifelong trauma or make her feel like she's living something, knowing information that no one else knows. I think that it would just all, she even herself would just chalk it up to like, I had a bit great imagination when I was a kid. I even played this one game where I went to a monster world.
Yeah.
It wasn't traumatizing for her. She wasn't scared.
No.
Very, unless she was around Randall, she was never scared.
Yeah. All right. We're going to, not onward, we're going to Luca on this one. All right. Why did the whole town just let Ercole get away with his dumb shtick? Like, why did the whole town seem to be coddling this kid? Because no one is like, oh, Ercole, you're such a good boy. And then behind their backs, he's a punk. He's just a punk the whole time. So why did the town let him continue to do his whole thing?
That's a good question. I mean, other than when he was bullying Luca, Do we ever see him ever physically bully any other kids?
Julia.
We just
definitely mean words to Julia, but not necessarily like physical.
I mean, if they are, I would get why they would step in if they saw him messing with their own kids. Maybe it's just more of a kind of like, he doesn't really mess with my kids, I don't really care,
right,
kind of thing. Like, he's some punk kid who's way too old to still be racing, but he's racing and winning. Good for him, whatever he wants.
Right.
I don't know why the parents who he beats all the time, why they don't get mad. But I guess they just kind of chalk it up to, well, we let him race, so he's allowed to race. So I think they just kind of are more of a keep to yourself town, not as much of like a giant. It seems like a small community, but they aren't really that close. You don't see anybody ever like interacting with each other unless they're merchants and they're buying stuff from each other.
Right. Okay. We're going back to Inside Out. If the entirety of the movie didn't happen, what would the sad core memories have done for Riley's Islands? If for some reason Joy just wasn't so spastic and sadness was able to just turn all the core memories sad in that moment, what do you think would have happened? Would it have been similar to what actually happened?
That's a good question. What were her final islands?
There was a bunch. There was, I think they added like Boy Island or something like that. There was a lot of similar, like there was still Family Island, Hockey Island, Friend Island, Goofball Island, but I think they added like more like teeny type islands.
I would guess. Okay. Newer islands were. No, that doesn't seem right. I would guess that it's natural for an island of personality to deteriorate and crumble as a new one's being built.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So I would imagine Goofball Island, or at least it gets significantly smaller. Like, yeah. I would imagine that her dad's Goofball Island is a lot smaller than hers, if he even has. So, like, it probably just slowly dwindles. Or they just have do they ever come back?
What, the islands?
Goofball Island in the end?
I think so, yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah, maybe. All right, Josh, we are moving to Onward now. Got a few questions from Onward. These are really good questions, I think. The first question from Onward is, why is nothing made / designed for the different species? Like, Bronco struggles to get in his police car, and a troll in Ian's class was way too big for the seat he was trying to sit in. Why did they not adjust for the different species?
Why isn't it like Monsters, where they have like everything adjusted?
Right.
It's a good question.
I wonder if it has anything to do with the fact that the movie is trying to say, like, hey, this is not natural. Like, we used to be like magical creatures that lived in this certain way, and we're trying to force feed into this life that doesn't really belong to us. And I wonder if that what the movie is trying to say has anything to do with why they did that.
That makes sense. I think that might, that kind of was, I think that better explains kind of what I was feeling, which is it's supposed to look. Oh, like, it's not supposed to look natural. It's supposed to look like they're fitting into our world. And if you then change the sizes and dimensions and the types of things, like you make cars that work well for horses, it doesn't look like our world anymore.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And so then the feeling of the movie gets all thrown off. It looks more like Monsters, Inc. than it does this magical world, but looking like our world.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It isn't practical. Like, if that was actually, if it was happening, they definitely would make like varying size desks and chairs and cars. But for what they're trying to do, where they're trying to make it look and feel exactly like our world, except with magical creatures, they kind of had to But didn't no the fairies had full size motorcycles that they were riding.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. That's very odd.
For sure. All right. Another question from Onward. How did the boy's father, or Wilden, how did he learn so much about magic, enough to even find a phoenix gem, and the mom had no clue about it? When he was so close to death, seemingly they should have been spending all their time together.
Ah, that is very interesting. Probably playing that board game and her not taking it seriously. He's off on a quest again. Okay.
I just thought that there's not really an answer to it, but I just like that seems to be kind of a weird thing for him. Yeah. All right. Why don't we move into the Toy Story universe here for our next question? This is one that I think I don't remember if we asked, but it's definitely one we've thought about and talked about before, if not on the podcast. If Buzz thought he was a real space ranger, why did he pretend to be a toy when humans were around?
Oh, it gets into the, we have talked roughly about this, not in this exact phrasing, but we have talked about it like when we talked about the rules, like when Woody says, oh, we're going to have to break some rules. Like,
yeah, who put the rules in place?
Or are these like, rules that are recommended by somebody that we don't know who put them in place, or are they like laws of gravity? Like, I don't have it. Like, we're gonna have to break some laws.
Yeah.
Like the law of gravity, which means it's impossible. So,
is it something innate? Like, is it just put within toys, whether they realize it or not? Or is it like, was he adapting to his environment?
It can't be, because they act animate around people often.
Yeah.
Often. So like, why it goes back to that rule, and I don't understand that rule. But I would assume that it is, maybe it's like, this is probably what I'm going to land on, and it's weird, but I'm going to go with, it's like kind of instinctual. Like they almost like act, they almost without realizing it, without planning to do it, without thinking about it, like just go unconscious when a person comes around. But if they're aware enough, they might be able to fight it. Mm-hmm. That's my best guess.
I mean, it doesn't make sense, but that makes sense. All right. We're going to up for this next question. Seemingly Carl and Ellie had decent jobs. Why could they not save enough money for their trip?
They didn't. Literally, Carl sold balloons. That can't be a good job.
Carl owned a balloon like station. That he was the owner of that. He definitely.
Yes. Yes.
And Ellie was a zookeeper. That's a good job.
Let's see. Let's do some quick math. Zookeepers in the U.S. range from, and now this is a big range, from $10,000 annually to $200,000 annually, with a median salary of $37,000.
Okay.
The 57% of zookeepers make between 37 and 94. That's just like a living salary. That's not.
That's a good point. That's a good point. And things right. did start and popping let's up. See,
balloon sales annual salary $17,000 to $60,000 with a median of 46,000. So they probably made roughly $100,000 together. They should have been able to make some decent money, but they had some health issues, and they had some life issues.
Yeah, you're right. I just thought that was a funny question, because I never like seems thought like they about were living
in a place that booms. But yeah, I don't think his job is better than I expected. I did not expect him to make nearly what she made, but I didn't think zookeepers, I didn't think made very much. Because if you look at like the state of pretty much all zoos, they are like, they're nice, but zoos have to be spending all of their money to keep their facilities nice and take care of the animals. They can't, I'm sure that they can't.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So yeah. All right. Balloon Salesman makes $46,000. Wow.
All right, let's hop into the Cars universe for the next few of our questions. And the first one is, why are there taxis and buses in the Cars universe?
Buses, I can't, do they ever, are they transporting cars?
I don't know.
I mean, I guess for the same reason that they exist in, like, New York City. Like, you don't want to walk everywhere. It can be tiring. Like, there's traffic to deal with. You don't want to deal with that. They're capable of, I think it's just for lazy cars, honestly.
Yeah, I just thought that was an interesting question because, like, the whole purpose of a taxi and a, like, a school bus is to transport people places. But, like, if everyone's a car, what's the purpose? I guess it's to Demolition Derby is the purpose, at least in Cars 3.
Yeah, that would make sense. But then you would probably just have, like, a trailer. Like Mac.
Yeah. Kind of like Mac.
Because that's what most of those, if you see any cars that go to, like, those types, go to, like, smaller local races or demolition derbies, they're usually on trailers.
Right.
So interesting. The bus ones is what's getting me the most. Yeah.
Taxi's just another car. Because, like,
yeah, I can't imagine why a taxi would exist. A bus seems like it probably could, but then I'm looking at the bus in Cars, and other than the school bus, but I'm looking at the bus, I'm like, there's no way cars would really fit in there very well.
Was there a double-decker bus in Cars 2?
Yeah, that's the one I'm looking at.
Oh, okay. So, I thought that
Deckington
was...
the Third.
Is that his name?
That's his name.
That's awesome. Why did we not know that existed? That's amazing.
Oh, there's also there's also just kind of like a normal looking like tour bus looking thing. Mm-hmm. That's a Paris one. That was in Paris. Very interesting. I don't understand the reasoning for it. I do see looking at Topper Deckington that on the side it looks like you can transport six cars. They're like angled up.
Well,
on
then
the
there
row.
You go.
So,
makes sense.
It's weird, but I mean, but looking at it, I'm like, how on earth do the cars get into those positions?
All right, this one is kind of funny, and I've heard this one before. In the Cars universe, if they get sick, do they go to the doctor or a mechanic?
The doctor is a mechanic.
Okay. I think that answers
before. We've said this before. I think when a car mechanically dies, it dies. And so
we have talked about that.
I do think that the doctors are mechanics. Mechanics are doctors. That's just the same. They're the same thing.
This is kind of morbid.
Means
but...
that at every race, there's a real quick doctor visit. A quick checkup.
This is kind of morbid, but do you think they have like car funeral directors?
Probably.
Yeah. Gotta be. I would imagine. All right.
Hey, a hearse is kind of like a bus.
Yikes. All right. Why don't we move on to Ratatouille?
I have two buses are for.
I have two questions from Ratatouille. And the first one is one I had never thought about, and it's just an ingenious question. What happens to the restaurant once Remy dies? Rats don't really have a long life expectancy.
I would imagine the same thing that happened when Gusteau died. Slowly dwindle into irrelevance.
Until rats take over. Wait.
Linguini never learns how to cook.
No.
He really tries to take it up.
Maybe Colette's there, right?
Yeah.
Here's the next question for Ratatouille. How in the world did Linguini afford the apartment overlooking the Eiffel Tower?
You mean the closet?
It's small, but that view, you would pay for that view. You would pay for that view.
Expensive, yeah. It's a one bedroom.
I don't even know if it is. I think it might even be a studio.
Yeah, dude, that doesn't look cheap.
Does he have a decent inheritance? Did he inherit it?
Whatever there. From who?
His mom.
Does mom have money?
I don't know.
It must be the only way.
Because he didn't know about Gusto.
But he must have been. Yeah, he obviously. So it must have been inheritance from his mom. It's the only thing that makes any sense.
All right. We have two more questions. One is about a movie that never happened. Josh, what do you think Newt was going to be like?
Probably too much like Rango.
It was Rio, right?
Rio's about birds.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it was about Rio. Because Rio, the whole thing is like, hey, we're an endangered species. There's only one left. But then he finds the female and they have to figure out how to not let the species die. I'm pretty sure it was the same thing, but with salamanders. Pretty sure it's Rio.
It was originally set to release in 2011. Rango came out in 2011.
I could have swore it was Rio.
Rio also came out in 2011.
I'm pretty sure it's Rio.
So then I don't know. I probably go with what Rio is, but the fact that there was another lizard movie also, I think, added to it. There's already a lizard movie. There's already a movie about species dying.
I guess it's a combination of the two. Yeah. It's like, hey, there's a lizard movie coming out at the same time, and there's a movie with almost the identical plot.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'll do it immediately, but I want to throw Rio onto the not quite Pixar list, because I think that will be an interesting conversation for us, because Newt was going to be so similar.
I slightly lean against them being the same plot, because I just looked it up, and Ants and A Bug's Life came out the same year at the same time, also a very similar plot.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
yeah. Maybe they just were tired of mirroring them, and they're like, forget it, we'll just let them have this movie, we'll go on to a different one.
Right. All right, Josh, the last question that I have for you is from Coco, and this might be the most legit question I've received. Why and how is Miguel's last name Rivera if most of the family is women? because Coco was the descendant from Imelda and Hector, and then I think Abuela is the descendant from Coco, and I can't remember who Coco was married to, but then I'm pretty sure the dad is from Coco or from Abuela. But
I'm looking at a family tree.
They're all Rivera's. Do you think it's just because the family business was the Rivera shoemaking company or whatever? And so they're like, hey, let's just stay Rivera's.
Oh, this is weird. Okay, so this family tree can't be right. because it has... Oh, no. Never mind, that's fine. Okay. So yeah, that is an interesting scenario. It comes down to there's a few different places. I mean, it must be just that the family business is so thriving and they're not taking on the male last name. Because I mean, if Rivera comes from where?
Who has from that? Hector? Is that from Hector and Imelda.
Okay, so then I mean, then
in theory, Coco should have taken
Julio's last name, yeah. Or Elena should have taken Franco's.
Yep. I was right in saying the dad is Miguel's dad
this is his paternal, yeah, the Coco is his paternal great grandmother.
Yeah.
But there is still two men that married in, because he's got Coco and Elena before mm-hmm. Enrique, who should have. So it would have been that Franco and Julio didn't,
just were like, hey, we'll be Rivera's. That's fine.
Rivera's, yeah. Why do they have a sibling for Miguel on here? That's
because he has a little sister at the end.
Oh wow, totally forgot about that.
The mom was pregnant during the whole movie, and then fast forward, he's showing his little sister the ofrenda.
This is where the song in Encanto is really important. It helps you understand the full family. I don't know any of these people in this movie.
It does not do a very good job inside of the movie explaining who everyone is
at all,
like how they connect.
Yeah.
Yes, Encanto does do a pretty good job. Here's my cousins. Here's my sisters. Here's my aunts. Here's my uncles. Here's my mom. Here's my dad. Yes, that they did do a good job in Encanto with that. All right, Josh, that's all I have. Do you have anything that maybe I didn't ask you to do this, so if you don't, it's fine. But do you have anything to add or any questions to think through?
I don't.
Yeah.
I didn't reach out my tentacles into the internet to find any.
Yeah, I didn't ask you to, so that's fine. I just thought this would be kind of a fun little thing to do. I got some pretty good questions. I feel like we were able to have a pretty good discussion, so I thought that'd be pretty fun.
That's awesome. It was fun.
We are currently let me open a calendar real quick. We are currently, I think we're at like 18 days until Lightyear comes out from when we're recording this. So,
all right, getting close.
Dude, I'm so pumped. I'm just waiting on Pixar to say, hey, you can buy your tickets. So that's what I'm waiting on. All right, man. This has been Lamp Stomp. We'll see you soon with our Lightyear coverage, and then we will jump into what is next for Lamp Stomp. So, for Lamp Stomp, this has been Zach and Josh. So, peace.